the cause of Anderson versus City of Seven Points.
May it please the court, Mr. Ronald D. Hines, representing Anderson versus City.
May it please the court. Let me first mention that I filed some supplemental authority with the clerk this morning, which will not be addressed during the course of my argument today. It was simply intended to reinforce the position taken under point of error number two and cites some of the Supreme Court cases that were rendered back in the earlier days, back in the first part of the century. Let me first mention that I was somewhat startled to find that respondents are challenging the jurisdiction in this matter, and in that regard, in addition to going ahead and reaffirming our position that jurisdiction is appropriate under subsection A6, let me also add that jurisdiction is appropriate under the provisions dealing with the split in the circuits. In this particular instance, the Tyler Court held, in its opinion in the last paragraph, that appellees bore the burden to present evidence that demonstrated that Skinner's refusal to grant the petition and call the election was arbitrary and unreasonable. The Beaumont Court, however, in Bonner v. Deal, or Deal v. Bonner, which we cited in our brief, takes exactly the opposite point of view on the question of the burden of proof and states that the Bonner et al. Did not have the burden of proving that the mayor acted unreasonably, arbitrarily, or capriciously. So we would assert that this court's jurisdiction is properly invoked in addition to subsection A6 and under the provisions dealing with splits in the circuits. Let me also say that the entire first point of error that's presented to the court is one which, as the court will recognize, is a public policy type of argument. And I would like to further go to a statement made in Bonner v. Deal, Deal v. Bonner, which is cited within the brief, but the language is not used, and I think that sums up our position, and I'll move on from there. As cited by the court in the Beaumont case, a basic public policy of Texas is to allow and even encourage the citizens to have the right to vote in public elections. The trial court, in entering its order granting the writ of mandamus, did not err. And again, we emphasize that the D.O.V. Bonner case is the one case which we feel is closest to being on point to that case before the court today. We note that it was not addressed by the Court of Appeals below, even though it was certainly urged before that court and was not addressed in respondents' reply before this court. With regard to the question of the public policy position and the question of the findings of fact position that we take under point of error number two, I want to point out to the court that we have very carefully in our petition for writ of error avoided getting into the conflicting evidence that was presented in the trial court. We haven't even bothered to provide cites to the record in the trial court for this reason. The Court of Appeals, in its opinion, acknowledges that there was conflicting evidence on this question of whether there were in excess of two-thirds of the number of qualified voters who had properly executed and signed that petition. Now, in acknowledging that conflict in evidence, the Court of Appeals, thus, as we view it, goes into our argument, and that is that where you have a conflict of evidence in the trial court, it is the trial court which is the sole determiner of the findings of fact that should resolve that conflicting evidence.
Except in this case, it's complicated by the counter-argument that the mayor should get to make that decision.
Except that, Your Honor, I believe that if we look closely at the statutory framework here, what we have is a situation where the mayor, once he makes his own determination, his own personal fact finding, so to speak, is presented with a ministerial or mandatory duty to order the election. Now, if we were to take a different approach other than that taken by the trial court, where the trial court goes ahead and reviews whether or not whether or not upon this conflicting evidence there were two-thirds or in excess of two-thirds of the qualified number of voters there. If we take the opposite approach, we end up with a situation where a minister can completely, a mayor can completely thwart the will of even as much as 95%, 98%, 99% of the electorate by simply making his finding that that there were not two-thirds of the qualified voters that were expressed on that petition, and then simply getting up in the trial court and saying under oath that it's my finding that that is an inaccurate, that the number of names on there were not in excess of two-thirds of the qualified voters.
Well, no one doubts, I would think, that if it were clearly established that the number was met and the mayor refused to discharge his duty, that would be an abuse. You pose the question, why should the Court of Appeals get to rethink the evidence in this case? And that's not very difficult either. Obviously, they probably should not be able to do that. But as between the trial court and the mayor, why doesn't the mayor get the benefit of the judgment call?
Well, I would assert that he doesn't get that benefit of the judgment because of the public policy considerations expressed in D.O.V. Bonner. But let me go even further here. We have a situation where the trial court made fact findings, which were not, alternative fact findings were not submitted by respondents. There were no requests for additional fact findings. These fact findings were complete on their face. Inherent in those fact findings were resolutions of all of these issues regardless of the standard of evidence applied, standard of burden of proof applied. Whether or not the Court of Appeals below here is correct in applying an arbitrary and unreasonable standard, or whether the Beaumont Court is correct in saying that no, that this standard is not the correct standard, it should be as any other case, simply a preponderance of the evidence that he should that there was a over two-thirds of the voters had executed the petition and mandamus the election. Regardless of which approach you take to the standard for burden of proof, the fact is that either standard is inherently contained within the fact findings of the trial court and in essence then is non-reviewable by the appellate court. In other words, had it been a jury situation where a jury instruction on the standard to be applied was given to the jury, then the appellate court would have something to review. It could review whether or not a correct standard was applied by the jury. Here, we have to presume that the trial court, in his wisdom, applied the proper standard, regardless of what we may think that proper standard to be.
Why do we have to assume that if the trial court didn't assume that of the mayor?
Well, if we were to take that situation, we would have to take this particular portion of the local government code out of its context and put it into some form of administrative context in the administrative agencies where you have administrative hearings and then appeal of those hearings, and with the assumption under the administrative burdens of proof, the assumption that the original hearing officer was correct. But that's not what we have here. We don't have a provision for a mayor to make findings and then to have his findings reviewed in the context of whether he was correct or not. There's simply no procedural provision for that type of approach.
So in your view, the trial judge makes his call and that's pretty much it?
Yes, Your Honor. I see nothing else in the statute that would allow for a different procedure. We would then go further and say that the Court of Appeals here, we felt, simply placed an incorrect burden upon petitioners, and that in doing so, then they disagreed with the trial court's findings. But again, we emphasize that the Court of Appeals itself acknowledges that the evidence before them is conflicting. They acknowledge through the balance of their opinion that, in fact, there were at least 198 legitimate signatures on that petition, and they acknowledge that the split in testimony was, if you believe the petitioners, then the total number of qualified voters within that township was 240 to 260 persons. If you believe the respondents, then that number was 358 persons. But that is the only dispute that they see in the conflict in the evidence, which was resolved against respondents. And then the Court of Appeals, in our view, improperly dismisses out of hand the findings of the trial court and asserts in its place its feeling that the more credible evidence was with the 358 total number. Again, we would point to the long, long, long history of cases in the state which indicate that it is the trial court's function to gauge the credibility of those witnesses and determine who is correct and who is incorrect. Now, let me also address very briefly the cases. There are three that appear to be most heavily relied upon by respondents and by the Court of Appeals: the Dykeman case, the Cobra case, and the Dykes case. Let me first say, both with regard to Dykeman and Cobra, that these two cases involved original mandamus proceedings before this honorable court, and in fact, this court was being asked in those cases to issue its own mandamus commanding actions in the trial court and otherwise below. This is a situation before the court which is quite different. This situation is one in which the court is asked to review the correctness of the issuance of mandamus in the trial court below and is asked to reverse the adverse fact finding, so to speak, by the Court of Appeals when it, in fact, reviewed the mandamus proceeding in the trial court. Secondly, we would point out that Dykeman very clearly references, and Cobra, I think, also references, and we would invite the court's close reading of these cases, references to the fact issues which underlie these types of decisions are still to be made in the trial court. That is the appropriate forum, the appropriate place to have fact decisions being made. I believe in Dykeman specifically referenced the fact that that fact issues were attempted to be brought to this court, which should not be brought to the court, that those should be resolved in the trial court. With respect to the Dykes case in Dykes v. City of Houston, this is a matter that dealt purely with discretional functions on the part of city officials. It did not deal with what we're talking about today, which is a ministerial or a mandatory function that is commanded by the statute. The statute says that the mayor shall do this. He shall order an election upon certain underlying events taking place. And in this particular instance, the trial court did find that these underlying facts did take place, and thus, at that point in time, the ministerial or mandatory function of the statute kicks into play, and the trial court concluded that mandamus was the appropriate remedy. Finally, in closing, let me cite to the court one other case that I don't believe is on point, and it's one that may or may not be of interest to the court, but just on the chance that it might be, let me cite it to the court. It's Vincent v. Burgess. The cite I'm going to give is out of the Court of Appeals in Fort Worth following this court's reversal last year in 1989 of the case when it came before the court on the question of the constitutional interplay of various codes. But it's Vincent v. Burgess at 775 Southwest 2nd 509. And we won't argue that particular case either way. We feel like it favors us more than it favors respondents if it's going to be deemed to favor either side, but it's one that might be of interest. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, ma'am. Court is ready to hear arguments from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Ronald R. Wally will present arguments for respondents.
Gentlemen, I'm Ronald Wally. I'm from the City of Seven Points, the city attorney. I'm from Henderson County. at the outset, in my brief, I do not mention Lawson versus Bryan, and I don't mention two or three cases that this court has laid down as rules that the Court of Civil Appeals to follow. However, underlying in my brief I've covered that, and I don't think you've departed from Garza versus Alibar. And so as a result of that, I'll start. Mr. Hines says, relies wholly on Bonner. Bonner versus Deal, the Beaumont court dealt with a city who had more than 400 voters. Wasn't any question about that. The question in Bonner versus Deal was there 400 signatures on the petition? That's far different than we got here. We got a small city. Boundaries are kind of hard to determine. We've got a very conflicting as to whether we've got how many people we have in that city of Sevenport. However, the Court of Appeals was not considering how many people that we had in the city of Sevenport. They were considering sufficiency of the evidence, number one, and number two, they were considering, as I set out in my brief below, whether or not that the evidence that he presented for writ of mandamus showed that the mayor was arbitrary or unreasonable in failing to grant their petition. The law that controls here is the Government Code 62002, and whenever you have a small city, such as we have in the city of Seven Points, which is less than 400 qualified voters, the law imposed a duty upon the mayor of that city to determine how many qualified voters there are in the city, and if there is two-thirds on that petition, if the petition submitted has two-thirds of the number, then he is to order an election. That's when he shall do it.
So in other words, there's no question in this case that there are fewer than 400 qualified voters.
No question. Never has been. It was agreed before at the Court of Appeals level, and it always has been. We have less than 400 voters, and so as a result, it fell upon the mayor that when the petition came to determine how many voters we have. He appointed a committee. The committee goes to the taxing registers. And in our county, our tax registers are not the best in the world to find out who is where and what. And so as a result of that, they had to kind of work around and see who did what last and see if that guy moved and all this. And finally, when they get through, they've determined that there's 358 votes. They did the best they could. As a result of that, that was not two-thirds, so the court, so the mayor denied the petition. As a result, this mandamus action. What the court was saying below, and it identifies it clearly, as it starts out with its facts sitting out on page 5 of the decision, it says the material evidence presented at the trial. And the court's already read that, so I'm not going to go through that, but They set out exactly what the material evidence was that the plaintiffs brought and gave to the court. Now, whether you have a trial by court or trial by jury, I don't quite understand what my adversity is saying there, but you have to have some sort of evidence support either the finding on a special issue or a finding by a fact by the judge. What the court is actually saying is that based upon the guesswork, and this was guesswork, because none of their witnesses testified there's this many people in Seven Point. They said, to the best of our ability to determine, we guess. So the court, on the last page of its decision, says that and complies with what this court has laid down in finding sufficiency. It says that the guesswork, maybe it was guesswork on Skinner's part, but it's guesswork on their part too. So, guesswork.
Excuse me, I think you're getting to it, but what in the statute would have us
leave the guesswork to the mayor rather than the trial court.
The statute says, here's why it leaves the guesswork to the mayor. It says that if a petition requesting that the election be held is submitted to the mayor and is signed by at least 400 qualified voters of municipality. However, if a majority of the qualified voters of the municipality is less than 400, the petition must be signed by at least two-thirds of the qualified voters of the municipality. That lays upon the mayor the duty to determine that. So his guesswork would be the best guesswork in this case. However, he went a little further than guesswork. He did work from the records of the tax office where they did not. Pardon. Where they did not. The question, real question is who, upon who is the authority delegated? Now, this is a discretionary act. The mayor has discretion here. This is the only time he has discretion. In Bonner, he would not have had it. Bonner was more above 400. He had no discretion. If there was 400 people on that, qualified names on that petition, he had to grant it. In this case, he has to determine. This is his, it's a fact-finding body that he has to do there himself. Once he finds the fact, then he's got to render a decision thereon.
Is his decision reviewable by anybody?
Yes, sir. And I don't disagree that the proper remedy is mandamus. But that's where I'm coming to next, that when you file a mandamus, then you've got to do, as the Court of Appeals has said, you've got to bring some evidence that his decision was arbitrary or was unreasonable. And they brought no evidence, I mean none, to show that there was, that his decision was arbitrary or unreasonable. And as a result of that, that's why they reversed and rendered the case. There were two findings made in this decision, and the court can see it. They found first that there was an insufficient evidence on the guesswork of the number of voters. And then they found that it was that there was no evidence brought by the plaintiffs in this case and to fulfill their burden of proof to show that the mayor under this act had acted arbitrarily or unreasonable as set forth by this court in the Dykes case. And that's why they cited the Dykes case. Based upon those reasons, whether it's conflicting testimony, I don't disagree with that. But where it's guesswork, I agree with the Court of Appeals below, that if you have to just guess, and if sitting as a trial judge and you say, well, I guess that's right, I guess this is right, I guess this is right, that's just not evidence with probable force. It just has no probable force, and so as a result of that, the Court of Appeals was correct, and they followed decision in Bryan. I kind of agree with the dissent in that case, but be that as it may, they have authority to review whether the evidence is sufficient below, and then in accordance with our rules, there's a detail act. This decision does just that. It starts at page 5 setting out what the evidence really was and the guesswork that was in. Then it continues on to page 6. At that point, they begin to, on page 7, they say, here are the findings of fact, and then they overrule my points 1, 2, and 3. At that point, they say that the principal issue then is before him whether he was guilty of gross abuse of discretion delegated under Section 6202. As a result of that, from there on, they set forth why they are going to do reverse and render. But in the final paragraph, it's set out, just as this court has said, it's clearly set out in there what they're saying is is not sufficient and why that he has not brought the proof necessary to sustain the writ of mandamus as set forth by the trial judge. So they are not attacking the finding of fact except for finding fact number two, where the judge says that there is two-thirds of the voting, or actually two-thirds of the voting population, I believe, is the way he puts it out. So as a result of that, I feel, and I think that this court, under rules that's been pronounced before, should affirm the trial court, the court of appeals. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument. Petitioner will present a response. Will present a rebuttal.
Just a brief moment, Your Honor. If I may, with regard to this question concerning whether there was evidence presented by petitioners in light of the assertion that there was no evidence presented whatever by the petitioners on this point, the Court of Appeals itself disagrees with respondents. It says the evidence before us is conflicting as to the actual number of qualified and registered voters who reside within the city limits of Seven Points. Clearly, there can be no conflict of evidence if there is no evidence. I mean, there can be no conflict of evidence without there having been evidence presented on the behalf of petitioners on this point. To say that there was simply no evidence flies in the face of even the Court of Appeals statements. But with regard to this question of arbitrary and unreasonableness, our position is that the Deal v. Bonner approach, saying that the petitioners in this case do not have that burden, is consistent with the public policy considerations of allowing the electorate to determine their future. It is to be remembered that the only thing being asked by the electorate here was the opportunity to have this proposition placed upon the ballot. That's it. The mandamus wasn't going to command that the city be disincorporated. It was simply going to command that this be placed upon the ballot for the electorate to make their determination as to their self-interest, as to what the future of their city would be. Now, even though with regard to this we feel strongly that the Deal v. Bonner approach is correct and that this is the proper burden of proof to be applied, we also would point out once again that even so, even if the court were to take the opposite point of view and to agree with the Court of Appeals below on what is the proper burden of proof, we still should win for the reason that the fact findings themselves are conclusive on all points here, but do not say that they do not embrace the concept of arbitrariness and unreasonableness. For all this court knows, for all the Court of Appeals knows, that was exactly the standard that was applied by the trial court. We have nothing in this record to indicate the contrary. So once again, we would ask that the trial court's fact findings be upheld, as they traditionally have been. Secondly, we would ask that the court to announce a public policy that the arbitrariness and unreasonableness standard not be the standard to be applied in cases such as this, which in our view thwarts the will of the electorate. Thank you.
That concludes the arguments in the third clause. The foregoing clauses are submitted on briefs and oral arguments. Marshall, please adjourn the court for the day.